I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 12th of January. On Mondays, it's always all things political. And our guest this hour is Jonathan Allen, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. We'll start with Attorney General Eric Holder announcing the White House will convene an international forum to discuss new means of countering terrorism. He was in Paris over the weekend to meet with European Union and U.S. security ministers on a joint response to the threat of jihadist attacks. And we'll ask our guests to respond to this huge, huge outpouring of support in Paris yesterday. As many as 1.6 million people, the Interior Ministry described it as the largest demonstration in modern French history. The president is giving us a preview of next week's State of the Union address, traveling to various cities, last week announcing a community college tuition plan. He will talk about making affordable high-speed internet more available in the country in a speech in Iowa, boosting home ownership, Senator Barbara Boxer's announcement that she will not seek re-election. And today, the Twitter account of U.S. Central Command was hacked, apparently by Islamist militant sympathizers, and a phone list of retired U.S. generals was published. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Jonathan, and here is how you reach us. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Jonathan Allen, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, how are
Hi,
you? Congratulations to the Packers.
Oh, that was nice of you.
Yeah, well, my Washington football team hasn't seen the playoffs in a while, so.
So you may as well be a Packers supporter.
Well, I root against anyone who's playing Dallas.
Yeah, a lot of people.
I mean,
do.
Root for anyone who's playing Dallas. I should say, root against Dallas.
Yeah, I was watching Selma actually, and so I didn't see the whole game. But my family told me a blow by blow account of everything that happened, and it was evidently quite a game. And how can you not love the team that is community supported, community funded, right?
I'm for it, just like public radio.
Thank you, Jonathan. Oh, Jonathan, we're setting off on a good foot here. Well, let's start with this amazing demonstration that took place in Paris yesterday. 1.6 million people, over 3.5 million people in demonstrations all over Paris, 40 presidents, prime ministers. What did all of that signify?
I think it signified that there is, that the center still holds and that there are people of goodwill around the European Union and particularly around the European Union and other countries. The United States obviously didn't send anyone particularly high profile over there, but there are people of goodwill there that want to stand up and show that that what happened in Paris is not something that they find to be tolerable, appropriate, or anything like that, and in fact wanted to show how despicable they find it. So I think there was a sort of a positive tenor to the idea that Western ideals will be preserved and that there are a lot of people willing to make sure that happens.
Do you have a good sense? The French government has been criticized for not having a surveillance up to par when it has to do with looking at people who had criminal records, known radicals. Is that a shortcoming, do you think, of many of the world's democracies, including the U.S.?
I think absolutely over time what we've seen is that those who would do harm are able to escape detection or to find ways to get underground, to not be tracked by authorities. I think, one of the things that the United States, according to reports, is telling its European allies is that they have to work more in conjunction with private companies, social media companies, to try to track some of these folks, and that they need to work with the United States to try to track these folks. It appears that one of the culprits here was actually on a terror watch list in the United States. So, the question is, how do you identify and track the bad guys without impinging on the rights of those who have done nothing wrong or who simply hold an ideological view but aren't going to commit acts of destruction and mm-hmm. terror.
It must be very hard. Over the weekend, evidently, there was an apparent arson attack on a German newspaper. A Belgian newspaper was evacuated after a telephone threat. Today, we have this news that the Twitter account of U.S. Central Command was hacked, apparently by Islamist militant sympathizers. And there are concerns that this could just be the beginning of many such attacks or cyber attacks. It's really hard to keep a handle on all of that.
Very much so, yes. The CENTCOM said that it had been hacked, not only their Twitter account, but also their YouTube account. I'm not sure. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest just said in a briefing that there's a difference between hacking a Twitter account and having a major data security breach. That said, it's not yet clear how much of a breach there might have been beyond the Twitter hack. And obviously, as we've seen with the Sony hack and hacks of our banks and many, many more attempted hacks that have failed, this is something that's going on constantly. I mean, it's not daily or weekly or monthly. It's literally happening even as we speak, efforts to break in to security systems and release information. I think it's only a matter of time before we see, attempts to basically steal that way and disrupt utilities and other critical infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Eric Holder announced that the White House is going to have this international forum, Jonathan, on February 18 to talk about new means of countering terrorism. Do you know very much about that? Has the White House outlined who will be here, what will be discussed?
We don't know a whole lot about it already. There are some countries that have said that they are going to participate. I believe Canada has said it's going to participate. I think the United States is in the position of both not being where it wants to be in terms of combating cybersecurity threats and also trying to get the rest of the world to move up to the standards the United States has, which tend to be a little stronger. And so it's an interesting position where they're going to try to, I think, bring other countries along. And, that effort was hurt by WikiLeaks and later by the Snowden leaks, Edward Snowden leaks. There are countries in Europe that are still angry at the United States for the amount of information that it's been collecting on European leaders and perhaps European citizens. And so, that the effort to tell other countries that they needed to start collecting more information and sharing more information was hindered by that. I imagine that these attacks in Paris will probably have a catalyst effect to try to get more of that coordination going on.
And what about the backlash from this? I've been reading that this National Front party, described as far right, is using last week's terror to divide the French public, that there has been an ongoing backlash across Europe against Muslim immigrants. And maybe that will spread to the United States. Maybe we'll have to deal with our own set of how we respond to terrorism here. But is that a growing concern at the White House, too, this anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant feeling in Europe?
Well, I think that there has long been, a sort of an issue within Europe and also within the United States. When you have terrorist attacks coming from within one population, how do you deal with that subset of that population? Whether it's, no matter how small it is, how do you get those who are outside that subset to sort of side against the subset? I think these are questions that European countries have been dealing with for a long time. I think they would, I think governments would like to ignore, if they were able to ignore them without dire consequences, I think they would, and I think they have to their detriment. I think the United States has also been in that position. I think it's, I think that there's a desire within government obviously there's security concerns, but there's also a desire within government not to fan flames of injustice or to stereotype particular populations or to even do anything that sort of adds to that. So I think there's sensitivity to it. I think in a lot of these European countries, you have pretty significant Muslim populations, and as a result of that, you know, you have a lot of Muslims who are very well integrated into the societies, who are important and leading members of the culture, in the countries, who are, economically powerful or politically powerful, and so, I think it's a hard question on how to deal with, again, this, you know, sort of small subset within mm-hmm. a larger group.
Yeah, and certainly a difficult question, how to keep people, young people particularly, young males particularly, although not exclusively, from finding ISIS or Al-Qaeda in Yemen or whatever the subgroup may be, to find that kind of life and learn how to use weapons and terrorize people, to find that much less than attractive. It's hard to imagine why so many people are joining up with these groups.
It's much easier to destroy than it is to build. I mean, I think ultimately that's, when you don't feel like you have much to live for and you're, looking to do something, I don't know. I mean, I actually struggle to figure out what leads people down this road. I'm sure there are experts better than myself to try to figure that out, but obviously it's a problem and a growing problem, and one that crosses borders and crosses parties and ideological divides and whatever. So it's something that we as a society, as a civilized society across the world, have to figure out.
Mm-hmm. The president, in anticipation of his State of the Union address next week, is giving these little ideas in various places in the country of what he plans to talk about. This community college tuition plan, I had no idea that you could have free community college tuition in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, it's a program that is very well supported by Republicans and Democrats alike there. What the president is proposing, and which will not happen because he'll face opposition in Congress, is to make community college free for students who maintain a 2.5 grade point average at institutions that where the community college credits will transfer over to a four-year institution. So there are some regulations on this plan. It would be $60 billion over 10 years. It would be a new entitlement program, meaning it would, which is why it would end up getting a lot of resistance on the Republican side in Congress. What the president would do basically is give money to states that created programs to do free tuition for community college students. So the states would have to set up the program. The federal government would foot three-quarters of the cost. A quarter of it would go to the state. And it's an interesting plan, but one that is unlikely to see the light of day unless it's wrapped into a much larger piece of legislation.
So why is he talking about it? Why is he proposing this?
Well, I think it's something he'd like to do. This is going to be his last budget that he gets to implement. The next year's budget he'll propose, but the president who succeeds him will actually oversee a lot of the implementation of that budget. So this is his opportunity to grab some issues that he really cares about. And I also think it's one that pins Republicans in a little bit. It's hard to be against subsidizing education, when you've got a state like Tennessee that has two Republican senators, that is very strongly Republican leaning, that has put in place a program like this and judges it to be very successful.
He's also going to be talking about making affordable high-speed internet more available nationwide. What's the holdup on that, and why is he, I guess, in Iowa going to be talking about this? There are many countries in the world that have really high-speed internet, and every time, I'm sure you find this is true, too, unless you've got a really terrific service, we sit here and say, come on, it's so slow. Why isn't it there instantaneously? Is that what he's talking about, what Japan has?
We all have ADD, right? I mean,
right.
refresh. I think that, the president wants to democratize the internet as much as possible and reduce the cost of access. And then, of course, people who make money off of the cost of access would like to continue to make the money that they're making. The holdup at this point is that you need regulation from the Federal Communications Commission. They're moving forward on that. So I expect that to be something that will happen eventually, unless it's reversed by the next president. I think what you're seeing from the president right now is some proposals that he thinks will be broadly popular and that will improve, make daily cost less for Americans who are struggling a little bit, and you know, barriers to access to the internet are also, you know, educational barriers and economic barriers, and I think that's what he's going after.
But do the big internet companies, cable companies, want to make the internet high speed more available?
They certainly don't want to make it more available more cheaply.
I mean, there's
no incentive to do that. So that's where the regulatory framework comes in from the FCC.
What about this plan to reduce mortgage insurance premiums? Has he already outlined that?
He has. He did that in Phoenix last week, and basically what it would do is cut 50 basis points or half a percentage point off of the premium on the annual premium on loans from the Federal Housing Administration. So, to make a long story a little shorter, basically those premiums had gone up over the years, particularly since the housing crisis. He wants to bring them back down, make it a little bit easier for home buyers to get into the market. It's not only for first time new home buyers, but it will mostly be aimed at them, and making it just a little bit easier, a little bit cheaper to get into the market. I think the statistic I saw on it was it would be for somebody who had a $200,000 house, it'd be something like $900 less a year in what they're paying on their mortgage. So, significant if you're trying to own a home and making a reasonable income, but find that it could be a little bit more affordable.
We're speaking with Jonathan Allen for our All Things Political segment this Monday. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Welcoming phone calls. We'll start taking them momentarily. We spent the first part of the show talking about what happened in Paris last week and what happened yesterday when well over 1 million people were honoring the 17 victims of last week's acts of terrorism in Paris. 40 presidents and prime ministers were there, no high-level U.S. officials, and the U.S. has been criticized for not sending a high-level representative there. What did that demonstration mean, and how do European countries and the United States work out a joint response to the threat of these kinds of attacks, which show no indication of going away? Eric Holder announcing the White House convening an international forum. It will take place on February 18 to talk about new methods of countering terrorism. What do you think needs to be included on that agenda? What do you make of the president spending some of last week and this week previewing proposals that he will be outlining in his State of the Union, which is coming up next week? He's been looking at making community college available to everybody, which is, as Jonathan said, probably an idea that will go nowhere, but it's an important one to him, making affordable high-speed internet more available nationwide, mortgage insurance premiums being reduced. We'll ask Jonathan, what can he do and is he expected to do using his executive authority in the next year? We have yet to talk about Senator Barbara Boxer announcing that she will not seek re-election. And whatever else you'd like to bring up, it's your show. It's a chance for you to call in with your concerns. All Things Political, 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also reach us on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are listening to All Things Political now, and we're welcoming phone calls for Jonathan Allen. Jonathan has been with us before. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. And we start with Pat in Richland. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, good afternoon. I can't really hear you. I'm assuming you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Wasn't it the French back in 2002, I think it was, when Dick Cheney was pulling every dirty, rotten trick he could to get the Iraq war going? Wasn't it the French that said, this is like the worst idea we've ever heard?
Jonathan?
Yes, the French the French were resistant on the Iraq War. They were loudly made fun of in the halls of the Capitol. I can recall people wanting to change and actually changing the name of French fries in the House cafeteria to Freedom Fries. And they were unsympathetic to anyone who pointed out that, of course, the United States would not have been successful in its revolution without the ideas and the bloodshed of the French. So, I think anybody who remembers history should know that the United States and the French have a long, strong connection. And, of course, we sent over General Pershing and General Eisenhower and a good number of our folks, young people in World Wars One and Two, to defend them. So it's a pretty close interlocking of these two countries' histories. And back in 2002, they definitely did not like the Iraq War.
Thanks, Pat, for the call. Aaron in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I appreciated your humility in recognizing that you're not sure exactly or like how to even kind of comprehend why young people are choosing extremist violence. And I think I personally recognize the importance of a really strong military approach of eliminating threats of those that we're not able to persuade out of terror. And yet, on the other hand, I recognize that Queen Rania and others have spoken to why this terror is happening is because of these unmet needs in these communities and a lot of desperation amongst young people. And I'm hopeful that there's going to be a more nuanced conversation that could happen about how we address terror and that we could take a step back and the international forum might be an opportunity for that. I was curious if you could speak about any innovative approaches to addressing terror that might be distinct from how we've approached it over the last 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. Thanks, Aaron.
I would only say this, that in persuasion, whether it's at the level of sort of individual persuasion that, in our daily lives up to, persuading nation states or non-state actors, it's usually not enough to have a carrot or a stick. You sort of have to have both. And I think whatever the solution is will be things that dissuade people away from terrorism and things that persuade them to sort of join the civilized world. The problem, obviously, with trying to dissuade terrorism is that if somebody is bent on killing themselves, it's hard to find something that will act as a stick. And so, it's a complicated question. I agree. I hope that there is a nuanced, and I think there is a nuanced conversation going on about how as societies we can address this. But I don't think it's ever, probably not in our lifetimes, ever going to go away entirely. This is not, terrorism didn't start on September 11th, 2001, and it certainly, sadly, is not over with the attacks in France. So, I think minimizing it and finding appropriate and positive ways to address what's going on worldwide are important, and I think some of that is probably, as the caller suggested, getting rid of people who cannot be persuaded, and some of it is persuading.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me that it wasn't all that long ago that we were doing shows, Jonathan, about how the threat of terrorism had been diminished significantly, that we were down to just a few thousand members of Al-Qaeda, that we had been successful in getting rid of all of the terrorists. And then, lo and behold, a year and a half or 2 years later, you've got these new groups forming, ISIS, one of them, and they're taking over huge parts of countries, and they're a significant threat, and it's very hard to understand who they are. And then our response to them is to, it would appear, be rather unsuccessful in a very strong airstrike, military drone strike attack against them, with significant questions about whether or not that's effective or if you're creating more people joining terrorist groups as a result of that. Without this kind of broad and deep analysis of what is effective, I mean, I'm led to believe that we don't really know that, and that there hasn't been very, very careful oversight of what works and whether or not what we're doing is working.
Well, it's interesting, in the moment that is probably closest for him to George Bush's mission accomplished on the aircraft carrier, President Obama told the American public that Al Qaeda was on the run, that it was decimated, and the truth is, as it came out, he later, sort of changed that to core Al Qaeda, and what he meant was, the Bin Laden followers in Pakistan, and but the global threat of terrorism was rising, even as core Al Qaeda was being being fought back in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So, I think we have, as a nation, underestimated the resilience and of these groups, and also the ways in which their methods and ideology spread.
Yes.
Their Al Qaeda branches, or people who are sort of copycat branches all over the world.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to Senator Barbara Boxer before we go back to phone calls. I have a feeling many of them will be on what's been happening in France. Her decision to retire, she's been a strong force for the Democrats for a long, long time. What led to the decision? Do you know?
She said it wasn't really about being frustrated by partisanship in Washington, and I'm glad to hear her say that and be honest about it, as she was a pretty strong partisan warrior.
Right.
It's nice to hear a member of Congress say that. And she said it wasn't because of her age. I think, I think she's got some other things she wants to do. I think she can feels like she can probably be effective at some things on the outside of government. I'm not. Not inside her mind, but I had been hearing rumors, for the last few weeks about her telling donors that she wasn't going to run. It's not terribly surprising. It is the first time you'll have an open Senate seat in California since 1992, the year that she and Dianne Feinstein were both elected to the Senate. Of course, Boxer had become famous in the decade before that, particularly excoriating the Pentagon for $600 toilet seats and all other wasteful spending there made a name for herself in a way that very few House members do, and obviously was a big champion for a variety of liberal causes, including the environment in the Senate. So she's a voice that I think a lot of Democrats are going to miss having there, certainly somebody who is very quotable and very smart, and it'll be a great and interesting race to succeed her.
Mm-hmm. I believe that you quoted a spokeswoman for the National Republican Senatorial Committee who said this could be the first of many Senate retirements thanks to their new Democrat minority status.
Yeah, it's, so the Republicans aren't necessarily thinking they're likely to win in California, but they're hoping that that Democrats will not want to be in the minority, and presumably that factored into Barbara Boxer's decision as well. She had been a chairwoman. She was going to have to serve in ranking minority member status, which is less attractive. The first announcement we've gotten since Barbara Boxer is actually from Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri, who said today that she's not going to run for governor of Missouri, leading most to believe that she will run for re-election to the Senate in 2018. So, we haven't seen a rash of retirements yet. I do think that the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee is asking its members to make their decisions sooner rather than later, so that if there's a race to succeed folks, then there's ample time to raise the money and get the political support in order for them.
You remind us that the Republicans have to defend 22 Senate seats compared with 9 for the Democrats. Will the Republicans have a run for their money next year?
Absolutely. I think there's I can't remember the last cycle in which it didn't feel like the Senate was up for grabs. Maybe 2004 was the last time it didn't feel like there was a chance that it could flip one way or the other. And certainly Republicans, I think, feel under the gun to try to prove that they can govern and should be trusted with control of the Senate. So I think it's going to be an interesting election season, obviously not just because of the presidential, but also because of the Senate. I think the House of Representatives is very likely to remain in Republican hands. It's 2 years away, so you never know. But I think the Senate will be a body to watch.
Let's go to Dave in Toma. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I think it's really appalling that President Obama didn't show up in France. It was one of the biggest gatherings of world leaders there's ever been. And, it's not just about the freedom of speech thing. It's about fighting the terrorists. And Obama, as an individual, he's not that important, but he's supposed to represent us. And they didn't have a lack of security for all those world leaders. He could have just about got on a commercial flight and gone over there and represented us. And think that was more important than anything else he could have been doing right now.
Do you know why he didn't go, Jonathan?
Well, his press secretary has been dancing and dodging for the last 45 minutes or hour on this question, and they have not provided any information. He has not provided any information about why the president wasn't able to go. Secretary of State Kerry was in India. There's a whole lot of convenient inability to blame anybody for the decision on this. The press secretary, Josh Earnest, said that it was a mistake for the White House. They should have sent somebody higher profile, in his words. He said it was not the president's decision to not send anyone. The vice president often represents the United States in ceremonial events, overseas. He would have been perfectly fine to send Biden if he was available. Eric Holder was actually in France,
there. Yeah.
The attorney general, but did not attend the rally. He was there for an emergency security summit. So, it's unclear to me how the United States failed to really be represented by anybody of huge stature. I mean, our ambassador was there, but, in terms of the leading members of the Obama White House or people who are personally close to him might have also sent the right kind of message. Even a former president, you could have sent President Clinton or
right.
President George W. Bush. Anybody of that stature could have been sent. And I think the White House now realizes that it made a colossal mistake because it's not only taking heat from Republicans, but also from, I think, from some Democrats and certainly from editorial pages all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Dave, for your call. Tom and Nelson, hi.
Oh, hello. Good afternoon. Yeah, I've never heard anyone talk about comparing the current threat with respect to ISIS and what happened in Paris with the struggle that took place back in the 80s with respect to Britain versus the IRA. To me, they seem somewhat similar, but no one's made that sort of comparison contrast or what we could learn from that vis-a-vis what's going on today. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Jonathan.
It's a good question. It's not something that I'm not as familiar with the Irish experience and the British experience during that time period. I think that at the very least could be said that there was a pretty narrow territory that was being fought over and a pretty specific set of opponents, and so perhaps the scope is one of the reasons you don't hear a lot of comparisons to that, because what you see with the Islamic extremist terrorism, it's all over the globe and sort of at any time, and the targets are not always aren't always the same. So I think there are some big differences, but again, I'm not an expert on the history of the English and the Irish.
Thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Terry in northern Wisconsin. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Kathleen and Jonathan.
Hi, Terry.
Yeah, a couple points here. Vulnerable Republicans for 16, and the second point is, did I hear that there were 46 Democrats, or the ones that caucused, the two independents that caucused with the Democrats, that they received more, like 20 million more votes than Republicans, those 46 incumbents?
Yeah, I saw that article,
right?
Too.
I'm almost embarrassed to say it because I'm not sure about it, but I thought I heard that.
I did, too. I read the same thing. Jonathan?
Yeah, I've read the same thing, that the Democrats who are in the minority have received a lot more votes than the Republicans who are in the majority. Now, part of that is the constitutional construction of our country and the small state, big state gap. So we have Republicans that get elected in small states, and they are represented in the Senate an equal amount to the Democrats who get elected in big states. So, for instance, Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein getting elected in California versus the two Republican senators from Wyoming, you can see how the popular vote totals for California would dwarf those for Wyoming, and yet they have the same power in the Senate. So that's one part of the explanation. And, of course, the body of the Senate is elected in sort of two-year increments. So a third of the Senate is up 1 year, 2 years later, the second third of it is up, and two years later, the third third is up. So those are all coming from different election cycles. I haven't gone deep inside those numbers, but they are interesting. For what you had this year for the first time was, I believe it's the first time in, you know, at least 15 or 20 years. Actually, I'm not sure if it was this year or the last time, but recently, in one of the recent elections, I think it might have actually been the last election in the House of Representatives, you had the party with the most votes nationwide. It was actually 2 years ago, the party with the most votes nationwide not being in the majority, and it had been many years since that had happened. So Democrats got the majority of votes for the House of Representatives in 2012, and Republicans held the majority. This time around in 2014, Republicans maintained the majority and also had the majority of votes in House districts across the country. Mm-hmm. Which is the norm. Usually that's how it happens.
And what about how many vulnerable Republican Senate seats 2016?
I apologize for not having it off on the top of my head right now as to how many are vulnerable. But it's not the full slate of 22. I mean, there are a lot of pretty safe Republican seats, and that's why I said earlier, I think it's going to be a pretty close election cycle in 2016. And for Democrats who think that, it's going to be easy for them to retake the Senate because there are more Republican seats up, it will not be easy for them to do that.
Mm. Thank you very much, Terry, for your call. We'll take more in a moment. You're listening to All Things Political here on the Ideas Network. We always have this, not the same conversation, but All Things Political every Monday at 1 o'clock. And our guest this hour has been with us many times before. He is Jonathan Allen, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. We spent a good portion of the hour because of the enormity of the issue of the terrorist attacks in Paris, the response over the weekend with so many people, millions of people all over France demonstrating in solidarity, the largest in Paris demonstration in modern French history, the president taking some criticism, lots of criticism, for not going himself because there were 40 presidents and prime ministers, or sending a very high-level former U.S. president or high-level official to be with those 40 presidents and prime ministers. The White House announcing there is going to be an international forum on February 18 to discuss new means of countering terrorism. We've spent a good chunk of this hour talking about that. And we're also looking at the president's preview of his State of the Union address next week. Some of the issues that he's brought up: free college, community college tuition for everyone, which, as Jonathan says, will not happen, but it's important to him. Making affordable high-speed internet more available nationwide. Nobody wants to pick up on that issue. It's a good question. Why don't we have it? Mortgage insurance premiums will be reduced if the Congress acts on what the president has said he would like to do. And we have still to get to what he can do with executive authority. What's on that agenda still? We'll ask Jonathan that, and welcome more of your phone calls. Here's the number. Now would be a good time for you to call 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All Things Political now with Jonathan Allen, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Caroline in La Crosse is next. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about federal government budget. In the federal government budget this year, they put in that they could increase the amount of lead in the waterways. Well, that's for the whole nation. And in Wisconsin here 3 weeks ago, they said that they found two bald eagles who were ill with lead poisoning, and one of them died. We have been working for years to get lead poisoning out of nature and out of our children. And I just want to know, why couldn't the president have vetoed that part of that budget?
Jonathan.
Well, a couple things on that. number one, I'm not terribly familiar with the lead provision, but I can say this. The president can't veto parts of legislation. He has to veto the whole thing. Unlike a lot of governors, doesn't have line item veto authority. So he can choose to sign or not sign the bill. I think, generally speaking, you've seen a little bit of rollback of some environmental regulations in some places. You know, the EPA got a small cut this year in its funding. If you're talking about lead ammunition, basically the omnibus had prohibited funding from going toward regulation of lead in ammunition and fishing. So that may be what you're talking about. There were some rollbacks of environmental protections in this bill, but generally speaking, I think what you've seen from the administration is a pretty strong commitment to environmental regulation. You've seen new carbon rules. You've seen new carbon targets. I think you're going to see soon a new methane rule in terms of regulating the air. So not to underplay the concern, but just to say, you know, they don't always get what they want, and they're not able to tear out just provisions they don't like. I should also say we'll have an opportunity in terms of the previous caller asking about vulnerable Senate Republicans. The number is probably about half a dozen. I was doing a little bit of back of the envelope during the break. I think it's about half a dozen Republican seats that are truly potentially in play.
And thank Caroline very much for the call. What about executive authority? What is the president likely to do next, if anything?
Well, interestingly, the mortgage plan to reduce by half a point those half a percentage point those mortgage insurance premiums, that is something he can do unilaterally all by himself, doesn't need Congress to do it. So that's one thing I think you can see straight up. I think you're going to see regulations through a lot of the agencies. They're already working their way through. I think some of them will get more attention from the White House and some of them will get less attention. I think the more politically controversial, the more likely they are to just do it and not talk about it a whole lot. I think if they seem to be more popular or, you know, address a really pressing need of the country, then they'll probably spend a little more time talking about it. But I mean, literally hundreds of regulations making their way through various agencies, and I think you'll see more of that.
Let's go to Wade in Madison. Hi, Wade.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. So my concern is really with the global reaction now to the terrorist attacks in France. And I think it is a tragedy that the United States chose not to participate in the way that other nations and their leaders did. And to me, this is symbolic of an ambivalence of the current administration in the United States on the topic of, in particular, Islamic terrorism. And there's really a need to think deeply about the double standards and false equivalencies on this issue when we see millions of people rising up and declaring solidarity with a murdered cartoonist, which is a horrible atrocity. But then when the Prime Minister of Israel wants to participate, there's actually a reaction against that participation. And for decades we've seen terrorist attacks, in particular against Jews, being minimized. In fact, we've even blamed the victims.
Jonathan.
Yeah, I can't speak to what the French government, was truly after with Prime Minister Netanyahu, but I do think that they probably were just trying to not exacerbate any situation at the moment. Obviously, a lot of attacks around the world over the years, over the centuries, over the millennia have been against Jews, and the kosher grocery store in Paris is no different. There, Republicans are definitely attacking the president for a reluctance to identify a religious group in association with terrorist attacks, and I'd spoken before about a subset of extremists within Islam, and I think that there is at times a reluctance to speak about it in those terms. I think, but I think probably because there's a fear of alienating the large majority of Muslims who are not who are not committing such acts, and you know, there's a battle for you know, their souls and for their allegiance, and you know, I think you know, leaders here and elsewhere are probably very sensitive to trying not to pin everyone as the same within a religious group. A, because you shouldn't, and, you know, it would be inaccurate to do that, and B, because I think it could be alienating to people who might otherwise choose to be part of civilized society. So, look, you know, it's easy to point fingers and assess blame, but the real tragedy here and the real blame here belongs with those terrorists who committed these acts.
Yes. Do you know the backstory? I had read today that somebody told Netanyahu not to come to Paris.
I had seen a story that suggested that, but I don't have any independent verification
okay.
of it. But yes, the suggestion was, at least in the story that I read, that he was not wanted, and I assume that, you know, I assume that's probably right, just because you know, the you know, for the potential for a backlash to him, to, you know, to sort of focus away from the event itself and more on him. You know, he recently said that Parisian Jew or French Jews were welcome to come to Israel. My, you know, my understanding of the right of return is they always were welcome to come to Israel. But obviously there's a lot of fear in the European Jewish community about what's going on over there. And, you know, I think he probably felt, as a leader, not only of Israel, but beyond that, I think, of you know, for a lot of Jewish people, they certainly listen to what the leader of Israel says. It was probably important for him to stand there in Paris with the other world leaders.
Nonetheless, that picture from the European Press Photo Agency of Netanyahu on one side of the world leaders and Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority on the other side is fairly dramatic, isn't it?
It's very dramatic. As they say, a picture you know, paints a thousand words.
Mm-hmm.
Or is worth a thousand words. I couldn't even begin to address the photo with a thousand words.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Wade, very much for your call. Linda in Tennessee. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good. I just have a request or actually a question that maybe he can help me with, because with the person being of the prestigious position that he is in, can he not allow or work towards more positive stories about Muslims? I am an American Muslim, and every time that you turn on the television, especially like some of the other channels, you hear such negativity about Islam and about Muslims. Not everybody is an extremist. Here in America, there have been mosques that have been attacked. There's discrimination against the Muslim communities. And the coverage that is given by the mainstream media is not equalized.
Jonathan.
Well, first of all, you know, it's disgraceful when any when anyone's sacred place of worship is attacked, and that's an idea that is, you know, sort of it is enshrined in our Constitution, you know, the right of free religious practice, and I think that's one of the things that distinguishes Americans from a lot of the rest of the world, and one of the things that we need to preserve, regardless of our own religions. So let me just say that off the bat. As far as news coverage goes, if you're looking for good stories, for positive stories, they tend to not be written as much as negative stories do. I mean, just across the board, I don't think that that's something that's singling out any particular group. I think that, you know, the news media, because of the interest of readers, you know, and because tension is required for most good stories, ends up covering negative things. Now, you know, if you had seen, I mean, I think you probably know about mosques being attacked because of news media, because we write about it, and we write about attacks on synagogues and bombings on churches. You know, I haven't done a study of the treatment of people of Islamic faith in the United States, so I can't, you know, I can't speak to it overall, but I just know as a reporter,
5 seconds.
Like, most of us go where the story is.
Jonathan, thank you. You're just a terrific guest. Thanks for your breadth of knowledge, and go Packers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, you too. Jonathan Allen, the Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, our guest for all things political. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, and to KP for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Concussions, our discussion hour two.